From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, the human magnet syndrome. Oh, yes, get ready for that. Well, another sad story to present to you. Coast to Coast guest Brad Steiger, who'd been on the program for years, an expert on the paranormal and noted author, has died at the age of 82. He leaves behind his wife, Sherry, who is just a great person, superb guest, and he will be missed. Brad Steiger dead at the age of 82. Wow, way too many. President Donald Trump has announced plans to leave the Iran nuclear deal, declaring the pact has failed to halt the country's nuclear ambitions and perhaps the biggest foreign policy decision of his administration. Speaking at the White House, Mr. Trump said, "I'm announcing today the United States will withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal." Mr. Trump for months had left open whether he would move to scrap the pact, and his apparent decision to reimpose sanctions has rattled European allies and leaves unclear how Iran will respond. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. John, first of all, give us a quick review, if you could, on just what this deal was, because our allies liked it, President Obama liked it. What's wrong with it?
Well, what's wrong with it is basically we could never inspect Iran's military sites. That when they say that Iran was in compliance with the agreement, they're referring to IAEA inspectors only allowed to go into designated facilities. There's very strong indications that they're in regular enrichment. We're talking about nuclear fuel for reactors or medical isotopes was going on, but weapons-grade uranium was continuing to happen and stockpiling those weapons. And Iran has continuously denied any involvement in building bombs. And yet, every time Trump had ever suggested that he was going to back out of this deal, the Iranian response is predictable. It said, well, we'll ramp up uranium enrichment to, over 20%, where it can be used as fissile material for nuclear bombs. So what was wrong with the agreement from the get-go, not only the cash payments to the Iranians and the sanctions relief, what was wrong about it was that it could never be verified, and it was kind of a bogus deal, and everybody knew it, and it could never pass through Congress as a as a treaty.
So what's the next move there, John? What's the next move on this chess set?
Well, Plan B, which everybody says there's no Plan B, of course there's a Plan B. The Plan B is there's the reimposition of crippling economic sanctions on Iran, and those companies in Europe that are continuing to provide material support to Iran's nuclear industry are going to be heavily sanctioned by the U.S. government again, like they were before this agreement. So it was the view of, the intel officials and the Trump administration that the current agreement was allowing Iran to arrive at a nuclear bomb faster than if there were no agreement at all. And as far as the EU response to it, don't forget how much business they do with Iran, how many exports go, and how much oil is sold to the EU of Iranian petroleum. So, of course, they don't want to rock the boat with Iran, but, it's the U.S. that has to weigh out the national security significance of this deal against, the self-interests of Europeans, China, and Russia.
John, Israel is gearing up for some kind of military conflict. What do you think's going on there?
I think what's happening is that, Iran has continued to threaten Israel with missile strikes on the day of their 70th anniversary celebration. It's coming up in on Monday. And, Trump was, or at least Mike Pence and other U.S. officials were due to attend that. And I think there's some very strong security concerns. So nobody quite knows what's going to happen. And you've got the Palestinians amassed on the Israeli border with Gaza, basically throwing Molotov cocktails and rocks and stuff and trying to break through the security fence. So the situation is very tense right now. So I think, you know, at least until, you know, the Israel Independence Day gets through, and the Nabka of the Palestinians, which is their, you know, the great loss when the State of Israel was founded 70 years ago, I think there's going to be a very high tension level.
Dr. John Curtis, one of his books, Dodging the Bullet, onlinecolumnist.com. Thanks, John. An earthquake with a preliminary magnitude of 4.5 shook a large portion of Southern California early Tuesday. The U.S. Geological Survey said the epicenter, which hit about 4:49 a.m., 7 miles north of Cabazon. I did not feel it. I must have been out like a light, but a lot of people did. Lava spewing in fountains up to 300 feet high from an erupting Hawaiian volcano has now destroyed 35-plus homes and other buildings, warning residents allowed brief visits to their properties to be prepared to flee again at moment's notice. Just won't stop. Pedestrian fatalities in the U.S. have skyrocketed 46% since 2009, creating an emerging public health crisis as researchers grasp to understand the reasons. I've got my own theory. I'll tell you in a second. The increases far outpace growth in overall traffic deaths, according to data from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Almost 6,000 pedestrians, people who might have been out for a walk after dinner, hurrying to get to work or rushing to cross a street, were killed by motor vehicles on or along America's roads in 2016. I think what's happening, people who are walking across the street are on their cell phones and sending text messages, and some of the people driving the cars are doing the same thing, and they're not paying attention, my guess. Luke Hanneman had a scary brush with death after he became infected with sepsis from biting his nails. Listen to this. The 28-year-old father of two in the United Kingdom began to experience flu-like symptoms, including cold sweats and shaking, after he bit the skin on the side of one of his nails. He tried to ignore the symptoms. He went to bed. Eventually, his finger began to throb and swell. He went to a hospital. He was told, "You're lucky to be alive," and treated for sepsis for several days. That's unbelievable. Indonesia, a study into health risks of microplastics, and the Indonesian scientists have launched the largest ever study into whether tiny plastic particles can affect human health. They're investigating the presence of plastic in seafood while also tracking the diets of 2,000 people. A poll of 1,000 18 to 25-year-olds found that money, appearance, and career worries, as well as fears about the future, mean that a large chunk of their time is spent feeling stressed out. Our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Breggin, with us. Peter, why are they so stressed out over these things?
Well, I think that people nowadays, George, aren't being taught that they can actually control their emotions, control their reasoning, take charge of their lives. It's always been very hard to be a human being, and I think that nowadays the kids are being taught as they grow up that, well, it shouldn't be hard. We'll protect you. We'll watch over you. We'll make sure that you don't have any triggers that are going to upset you. And I think it's incredibly important to change this view about what growing up is. Growing up is about learning to overcome stresses. It's about learning ways of approaching life, having better principles.
Are you seeing, and are psychiatrists seeing, more and more young people these days, Peter?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I see a number anyway, because I'm in Ithaca, New York, and we have Cornell here, and we have Ithaca College here. And certainly college is more and more stressful than it ever was, because very few people in college are operating on any kind of set understanding of human beings and our need to work hard, to reason, to be ethical. You know, the kids are binge drinking on the weekends. They're taking drugs a good part of the week. There aren't any clear-cut sexual standards. Even sexual identity standards are sort of disappearing. And I just think it's getting harder and harder to grow up, period. It just looks to me like it's an infinity harder than it was when I was young.
One of Peter's books, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. There's lots of that going on now. Thanks, Doctor. Appreciate it. Up next, one of our favorite guests, Robert Gleason, back with us on Coast to Coast. His latest work, The Evil That Men Do. Wait till you hear this story next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you and our special guest, Robert Gleason. Bob is the executive editor at Macmillan Publishers in New York City and Torforge. He has written several books on nuclear terrorism, as well as starring in a History Channel special that was devoted largely to nuclear terrorism. He has discussed nuclear terrorism on PBS, NPR, hundreds of other shows, including ours. Mr. Gleason has also worked with inmates in more than 60 prisons. New York has named a day after him for the work he's done for prison literacy. He also recently succeeded in getting the anti-nuclear activist nun, Sister Megan Rice, to get released from prison. And he is, and I'm proud to say this, my editor at Torforge as well, where he brings out his red pen and attacks my copy. Robert, welcome.
George, thank you so much for having me on. It's
good to have
you. Good to talk to you.
This is a fantastic book. Now, it's a novel, but it reads like it's a real-life story.
Yeah, well, the world is moving increasingly toward oligarchy. But, you know, there's three Americans that have more money than 50% of the country. One-tenth of 1% of Americans have more money than 90% of the country. There's eight people in the world, six of them Americans, that have more money than 50% of the world.
Jeez.
We got a single company in this country whose total assets are almost twice the GDP of Germany, the third biggest economy in the world. It's, you know, and that the United States already has an oligopoly. That means that all the major industries are dominated by six gigantic companies. And which means it's very difficult for, you know, smaller companies to start out and get established. They get squeezed out. And Justice Louis Brandeis once said that it's impossible. You can have money concentrated in a few hands, or you can have democracy. You can't have both. And the whole world is moving increasingly toward this intense concentration of wealth. It's almost inevitable. It's called the iron law of oligarchy. You know, power begets power, money begets mm-hmm. power, money begets money, and it's almost like a natural law that eventually power and wealth concentrate in fewer and fewer hands. And the only way you stop it, of course, is through you know, like the old antitrust legislation under Theodore Roosevelt, that you break up the large monopolies, but which we have no appetite to do anymore.
And of course, an oligarchy means a very small group of people who have incredible control over countries, organizations, or institutions. How many people do you think it takes to really control?
Right now, that in the case of the GOP, I don't know what the numbers are on the Democratic Party, but there's 200 billionaire donors that contribute more money at the state, local, and federal level to political campaigns than all other donations put together. It's in Jane Mayer's book, Dark Money.
That's
yeah. But in my novel, of course, what happens is Putin organizes a bunch of these oligarchs, and they're plotting an oligarchic takeover of the major democracies.
That could be true.
The UN the UN responds this is another thing that, you know, that the world's GDP is $75 trillion, more than a third of it, over 35% of it, is secreted away in black hole offshore tax havens. And that the United States is about 12% of our GDP. We've got a gigantic GDP, about 18 trillion. And but in the case of Russia, as I said, the world's GDP, about a third of it, is in offshore black hole accounts. In Russia, Putin's stolen over 100% of the GDP, he and his cronies.
He's got to be one of the richest people on the planet.
The richest. William Broder, who had been the number one foreign investor in Russia, had spent a lot of time there. He finally got believe it or not, he is his lawyer that was investigating corruption in Russia. He was thrown into prison summarily and tortured to death in prison. And Broder got the Magnitsky Act passed, so Putin sentenced Broder to death in absentia. Putin even sentenced his lawyer Sergei Magnitsky to death. of life in prison, and Magnitsky was already dead. It was the only time in the history of jurisprudence a corpse was tried, convicted, and sentenced. You know, it's the and of course Broder lives under threat of his life, and the Putin's had over 300 journalists killed. He's imprisoned over 300,000 legitimate businessmen because they refused to pay the backsheesh. But in my novel, of course, the UN's going to expropriate a lot of this black money that's in the offshore tax havens, and the Putin organizes the oligarchs, and they plan to nuke the UN, and so that my battered heroes have to save it all. But in the course of doing this, as you know, I write a lot about nuclear terrorism, fiction and nonfiction.
Right.
But I did a lot of research on the global movement toward oligarchy and the concentration of wealth and power in fewer and fewer hands. And it really, it's absolutely terrifying, and it's coming. It seems to be almost inexorable. And it spells the death of democracy worldwide.
And Bob, there's been some talk that Putin wants to do you in. Now, is that just part of the novel, or
that's actually I sent it out for pre-submission blurbs, and everybody that read it said Putin's going to kill the author.
Oh my
God! William Cohn, who was Clinton's defense.
He was just on the show a couple weeks ago.
Wonderful guy. He wrote Run, Gleason, Run. The witness protection program cannot save you. You've spared too many powerful and pretentious with your wicked wit and implacable need to tell the truth. Trump and Putin will be especially furious. Those two will hunt you down like a dog. Guantanamo will be a Club Med or a Sandals luxury resort vacation compared to their untender mercies and maniacal administration. So adios. It was fun knowing.
Well, you are stepping on some toes with this novel, you know.
Yeah.
Why would you go out on a limb like that, Bob?
I got so, as I read this thing, you know, I read more and more. I did more research on it, but I have to say Jane Mayer's book, Dark Money, was a cornucopia. She really ought to get a Nobel Prize. I mean, she really, it's the best book I've ever read on politics, and not only the United States, the world today, about how big money, dark money, as she calls it, is commandeering democracies worldwide. And I just got angrier and angrier, and it's something that, you know, need to be said. And in the course of it, I always had a sense of dark humor. And some of the scenes, I'm told, are just hilarious. And Nelson DeMille, who's the number one New York Times bestselling author, said you'll laugh your butt off. And some people tell me some of the scenes they're laughing, really laughing. And particularly the scenes involving his name is Putilov. And some of those scenes, I'm told, are really quite funny. And people thought that perhaps the humor might antagonize some of these people even more.
As we look at your book, let's talk about some real-life episodes that are going on. What's your take on the most recent situation with the president getting out of the Iran deal?
I heard the gentleman you had on before. Mm-hmm. I really didn't understand anything he was talking about. I know, Corey, as you know, I wrote a nonfiction book on nuclear terrorism. And there's the Pompeo, when he was being interviewed by the congressman for the Secretary of State job, he said he could, and he had been CIA director, he said CIA couldn't find any evidence at all that Iran had violated that agreement. President Trump, when he gave that little press conference today, he never cited one example, not one piece of evidence that they violated the treaty. Nobody has any evidence that they ever violated it. And that they had been within about 2 months of building nuclear bombs. And now they would, if they would have to start up from scratch, and it would take them a couple of years to get to one. Also, this whole notion of reimposing the sanctions. The United States doesn't do business with Iran. It's against the law. We don't have any sanctions on Iran. We don't do any business with them. So what are you going to do? Are you going to start, if England, Germany, China, Russia,
France,
if they're doing business with Iran.
Hold on for a second, Bob. Hold on for one sec. We'll come right back to this when we wrap it up on Coast to Coast AM. Ah, yes, Las Vegas, June 9th, our live stage show at the Silverton Casino. Elvis won't be there. Well, maybe. Maybe he will. Who knows? He may pop up all of a sudden. Our affiliate, KXNT, along with the Danheiser Wagner Productions, they're putting on this incredible show. Saturday, June 9th, you can get tickets by going to coasttocoastam.com, look in the carousel reel, or click events. It'll open it up. Just remember the date, June 9th. Then August 25th, Asheville, North Carolina. Those tickets are going really fast, folks. At the Diana Wortham Theater, you can get to their website by going to DW Theater, and spell theater, theatre.com, or go to coasttocoastam.com and click events at the top of the homepage. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with Bob Gleason. His latest book is called The Evil That Men Do. This thing is right off the presses, Robert, isn't it?
Yeah, it was pub today. We're launching it on your show, George.
Perfect.
Oh, George, may I mention my website?
Yes, absolutely.
www.robertgleasonbooks.com, and Gleason is spelled G-L-E-A-S-O-N, like Jackie.
And we have a link for you right at coasttocoastam.com.
Thank you so much. Oh, and also just one other word. These are so hilarious. I just got to read one more. That number one New York Times bestseller, Doug Preston, said, how do I describe the evil that men do? Brazen, offensive, hilarious, crazy, scurrilous, wicked, but above all, entertaining beyond measure. Unfortunately for Gleason, he's going to be enjoying his happy hour with a three-drug cocktail in Atlanta Fed or Leavenworth. Larry Bond said, if Trump and Putin don't murder Gleason within weeks of the book's publication, it will be a miracle.
Well, we don't have to worry about Donald, but you never know about Vlad.
Oh, Vlad, as I mentioned, he's had 300 journalists killed. He's incarcerated 300,000 innocent, legitimate businessmen because they didn't pay the blot.
Who was that guy when he first took over? The guy who owned that oil company?
Yeah.
He got him.
Yeah. He put him, locked him up, railroaded him on trumped-up charges. He was like Bill Broder. He was a reformer. He didn't want to pay the backsheesh, what they call in Mexico, the mordida, what they call in Russia, the blot. He didn't want to pay it. He didn't see any reason to. And Putin will let those oligarchs get away with almost anything as long as they pay up.
A
lot of the scholars that have been studying this says, he really runs that country like a mafia don.
And he's getting away with it.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be... Stalin, who was arguably the worst mass murderer in world history, died at the height of his powers in his sleep. Yeah. We were talking about the oligarch thing. I just want to mention one other thing, which is extremely important. That if you look at the richest men in America, what you see today is they don't really make their money. Like you looked at guys like John D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, Henry Ford, Frick, Harriman.
Well, they were industrialists.
Well, yeah, they did ruthless things, but they were great men. They made America. Because of Henry Ford, we had automobiles coast to coast. Because of Frick and Harriman and those guys, we had railroad trains connecting the country. The John D. Rockefeller refined the oil that powered all that transportation. These were Carnegie made the steel that made all this stuff.
I know it, but things have changed.
Those are great men. You look at what the top billionaires in this country do today. None of them make their money in any way that's socially redeeming. That they make money off of money off of money. That so many of them, most of them make their money off of global derivatives, which is pure uncollateralized intrinsic debt. They're debt instruments that they own. They make huge monies doing vanity enterprises on the internet.
Well, they found out how to do it. Can you blame them for being so clever?
John Maynard Keynes said 100 years ago that the accumulation of wealth for wealth's sake. He said, rather than making money so you can have, so you can have a nice house, so you can have a nice car, you send your kids to college, where you could do things meaningful.
Take care of people you care about.
That's saying that just to rack up billions and billions of dollars that you're never going to send, he said that's intrinsically pathological. And he said these people, he said 100 years from now, people are going to think these people are sick. unfortunately, 100 years later, that's they've taken over. It's not the meek that inherited the earth. It's these people, and the and it really is. As I said, 0.1% of the country now has more money than 90% of the country.
That's true.
And these people, they run predatory casinos, which is hardly a redemptive enterprise. That they don't do anything good with the money. And unlike Carnegie and Rockefeller and Frick and Henry Ford and those guys, it's a strange world that we're living in.
It's changed.
And the people, I'm starting to ramble.
That's all right. I want to wrap up with the Iran situation. Yeah. Then let's talk about North Korea. Sure. But with the Iranian situation.
One thing about Iran, and nobody's saying it, and this is terribly important, that one of the worst aspects of it is, it's just like one of the problems with the Iraq War. By the way, John Bolton and these guys, they were in favor of the Iraq War, too. They were in favor of the Vietnam War. They never saw a war they didn't like. And they're really looking to go to war. If you love the Iraq War, you're really going to like the Iran War. Iran actually has a real army.
But they can fight back.
Yeah, and it's a very diversified economy. They're very smart, intelligent.
And ironically, Bob, the Iranian people don't want war with the United States.
Oh, they don't, and they want to be like the United States.
Yes, they do.
When Americans go to Iran, they tell me that the Iranian people are fantastically friendly to them. They won't let most Americans into Saudi Arabia, but the Saudis it's dangerous. The Saudis really don't like Americans. And yet, they're the ones that bankrolled ISIS and Al Qaeda. Yet, they're supposed to be our allies over there. But Mike Flynn was attempting to sell the Saudis and their Arab allies 44 nuclear power plants. And as we've talked before, with a little bit of additional technology, you can build nuclear bomb fuel reprocessors and reprocess the spent fuel rods into fissile bomb grade plutonium. And that they've been called nuclear power plants. Have been called the training wheels for nuclear weapons programs. They've been called starter kits for nuclear weapons programs. And when Flynn was national security advisor, he actually tried to sell the Saudis and their Arab neighbors 44 nuclear power plants. I mean, this is crazy.
It is crazy. We'll come back to that in a second. Okay, North Korea. It appears that things are going to end peacefully here. What do you think?
There's no comparison. People have been trying to say that we need to have the same strategy that we had with Libya to dismantle Libya's nuclear program. That there's no comparison with Saddam's nuclear program or Gaddafi's. That they Saddam and Gaddafi had very. In fact, Saddam had no nuclear program, contrary to what John Bolton and Netanyahu.
He didn't have one.
And what Libya had was very crude. It was never going to get off the ground. So they really weren't giving anything up. The estimates I've seen on Kim Jong-un is that he probably has around 30 weapons. The program now to build nuclear weapons is so prolific and so streamlined. In another year and a half, he could have 30 more. So you're talking about 60 nuclear weapons. These are plutonium weapons that are fairly compact. He's got thousands of miles of tunnels into mountains. They tunnel every place around there.
Are you saying you don't trust him?
Never know. There is no way to know whether you got all of his nuclear weapons.
Nope.
Is there? If he wants to hide them, we're never going to find them. And so it's only prudent to assume that if you do a deal with Kim Jong-un, he's going to have hidden away some nuclear weapons.
You don't trust him?
No, well, it's also not even a matter. That Reagan said trust but verify. The problem with trying to do a deal with Kim Jong-un is you can never verify.
Who would trust a guy who would kill off his uncle, probably be responsible for killing his half-brother at the airport when he got sprayed with poison?
Yeah.
How can you trust somebody like
that? Also, we got Saddam to give up his nuclear weapons program, alleged program. We thought he had one. We got Gaddafi to give up a program. We got Ukraine to give up, and they had a lot of nukes. They had a lot of Russian nukes, and we got them to hand them all over, and so they could get reprocessed and dismantled. They did it all, and when Putin went into the Ukraine and took Crimea, We didn't stand up there. And by the way, we had promised the Ukrainians that if anything like that happened, that NATO would defend them when they gave up their nukes. We never defended them. We stood by and let Gaddafi get knocked off. In fact, we assisted in it.
So how would you?
Nations don't have friends. Nations have shared interests. Or they have shared animosities. They don't have friends. Why should Kim Jong-un trust us?
There's talk that he had a secret meeting just the last day or two back in China.
Yeah.
I think they're giving him marching orders.
Well, that's his economy is absolutely collapsing. One reason they can't hold talks in Switzerland, with President Trump, is that he doesn't have a plane that will fly nonstop to Switzerland. I mean, he doesn't really have a very good army anymore. He took all that money, and there's been very severe sanctions on Kim, and he's taken all that money and he's putting it into ICBMs and nuclear weapons. He don't really have anything else. And if that country is going to survive, they had the same situation in the 90s where we really did dismantle. He didn't have that. He only had maybe one nuke back then. And we did dismantle his nuclear program, and we could have kept it dismantled. And but in 2002, we let him throw out the UN inspectors and start it up, and we never did anything. We could have actually bombed his entire program and all his nuclear bomb materials that he would have reprocessed into nuclear bomb fuel. We could have all bombed the whole thing into radioactive dust in October of 2002. And instead, we blinked, and we went into Iraq, and you know how that ended. And we allowed we're responsible for Kim Jong-un having a nuclear weapons program. The Bush administration was. And by the way, Bolton ran the nuclear nonproliferation part of it, too, back then.
So we're going to have an semblance of peace with North Korea. The South and the North apparently are going to be okay.
Yeah.
The president will meet with Kim. They'll cut a deal, and things will go away. But you're saying don't trust the guy.
No, and there's something. You can't, once people have a lot of nuclear weapons, you really can't, it's very difficult. You'd have to invade them with a land army, and you'd have to try to take them away. It's very difficult. At that point, you've got to figure out how to live with it. I know it sounds horrible, and it's very un-American. Americans are impatient, and they want everything now. But you can't, The only other options are to go in with a land invasion, and
you can't lose
New York City too.
You can't do that. But the Russians aren't concerned about the North. The Chinese really aren't. Same with Iran. We seem to always be the ones at odds. Why can't we have peace with all these countries? I don't get it. Is it because of the oligarchs that are trying to take over this country?
The thing I started to say, which is about Iran, and nobody's talking about this. Nobody's mentioned it. Getting rid of the agreement, it's already starting to send oil prices skyrocketing.
Oh, my God, they're going nuts.
Send oil prices into the stratosphere. Just like one of the byproducts of the Iraq War, which was run by a bunch of oil guys, it sent oil into the stratosphere. Before the Iraq War, Putin was going broke because oil prices were so low. Before the Iraq War, Iran was going broke. One of the reasons Iran agreed to this agreement was that they're in terrible financial shape, and because of low oil prices. This is going to get Iran healthy again.
It's going to get Saudi Arabia healthy again. All of them.
We're going to make the mullahs rich. We're going to make the Saudi oil sheiks rich. We're going to make Putin and his.
Well, what about us, though, Bob?
Rich.
We're one of the biggest exporters of
oil. The American public's going to pay for it through high
oil prices. But, I mean, even here, we're one of the biggest exporters now of oil.
Yeah, but prices are going to go up for geopolitical reasons, and we'll make some money. Unfortunately, the kind of oil we're producing, the shale oil, it's very expensive to make. So our margin of profit will not be as great as some of the Saudi oil. I'm told they pump it out and barrel it up for about $1 a barrel. and that the if it goes up to $100 a barrel, they're making $99 per 99% profit on a barrel. But the in the United States, the shale, we don't make anything like that per barrel of oil.
I just paid like $4.50 here in Los Angeles for a gallon. It's crazy.
Wow.
Time to go back to St. Louis. It's cheaper.
Yeah.
My gosh. Well, let's talk a little bit about Saudi Arabia. I want to get your take, too, on Mohammed Salman, who will be king, who arrested all these people and put them under house arrest, these Saudi billionaires, and apparently they had to buy their way back out. What's going on with that?
The demographics, like the demographics in Russia, the demographics in Saudi Arabia are terrible. But in Russia, by the way, one of my favorite Putin statistics, in 35 years, he has so decimated that country that the life expectancy of a man in Russia is 11 years less than that of a woman.
Jeez.
In Russia, and it's 15 years less than in a European nation. Young kids in Haiti have a greater life expectancy than young boys in Russia. But in 35 years, the working age people in Russia are going to represent 14% of the population. And it's because of the health crisis in Russia that the average for per person in the United and Russia average wealth is a little over $800. That's less than in India. It's like Haiti. It's those levels. Putin, he and his cronies stole the entire GDP of Russia, put it in offshore black hole.
How'd they get away with it?
And he's one of the tragedies of this world is people don't, they don't vote their self-interest. They vote their grievances. And and Putin has managed to convince the Russian people that they are beleaguered, that all of their problems are due to the United States, are due to NATO,
or other people.
He's Horatius at the bridge, holding off these Western nations, and that he's the only thing standing between them and the everlasting.
They apparently believe him.
Yeah, and they buy that stuff. Well, there's a whole world full of people. You can divide the world up into two groups, givers and takers. And the givers tend to, if they make a mistake, they tend to take responsibility for it. That's the givers. The takers, they tend to blame other people, everybody for anything goes wrong. They've got to blame. There's somebody's got to be to blame. And unfortunately, probably half the population of the world is like that. And Putin knows how to play people like that. And
he's cagey.
Yeah, and he's ex-KGB. It's called disinformation.
KGB, that's what he is.
Yeah. And he's tried to turn people. Sometimes people say he's tried to turn the Russian mafia into a new kind of KGB. KGBized it, and people have said they've called the Russia a mafia state. Some people have also called it kind of. He tried to make it like the KGB used to be.
Robert, we're going to take a quick break and come back and take phone calls with you next hour at the top of the hour. Robert Gleason, our special guest, his latest book that just came out today. We got him first, The Evil That Men Do. It's a novel, but it's surely based on a lot of real things that are happening. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of Bob Gleason's concerns of the future. What does he see out there in his little crystal ball? And we've already heard him talk about the situation in Iran, North Korea. What's next on our plate? That'll be part of our oncoming stories on Coast to Coast AM.